Here we go, hour one, G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan here on a Toxic Tuesday in the G-Bag Nation. It's a three-hour Tuesday. They're taking on the Reds once again this afternoon. Pre-game coming up at 5 o'clock. General at your service. If you see me, bear me. N.A. There's Broadus, former Cowboy Scout, a Super Bowl champion. You have Ross Lebinski and the Pimp Cup in for Lucius today. Once again, send L.A. some love on social. Let him know he's missed. Of course, you have Wolchuk and Schiafalo reunited, and it feels so good. And Carter Freeman is coordinating your video. You can watch us online, Twitch, YouTube, and thank you for making us part of your day. So what an eventful day it's been. This is just a sports content goldmine paradise that we're in right now, guys, with everything going on. Just appreciate that. But Micah has spoken. A lot of things have been said about Micah. You know, I my read is this is Jerry kind of putting a charge of fire into the deal to make it the lights a little bit brighter and to maybe negotiate a little bit at the same time. But My thought is Mulligetta is going to win because good agents know how the Cowboys are doing. It's an easy pattern to follow, and then you win in the end. You make your client rich. But Jerry was asked about why they're trying to circumvent the agent David Mulligetta, and Jerry said, who? Don't even know who that is.
That's a great line, though.
Clarence Hill tweeted, Jerry Jones with blatant disrespect to Micah. Micah's agent, David Mulligetta. The agent is not a concern here. I don't know his name. Okay. Mulligetta is one of the best and most respected in the NFL. Micah retweeted that and said facts, among other things. Said there's no one I trust more when it comes to negotiating contracts than David. There will be no back doors in this contract. So this is a spicy public negotiation. What's your guys read on it?
Well, latest from Jory Epstein, our friend, said multiple sources confirmed to her that Micah asked Steven and Jerry to call his agent, David Mulligetta, to negotiate. Sources confirm also that the Joneses have not made that call. Mulligetta has talked with the Cowboys director of salary cap player contracts, Adam Pacifica. So Mike is saying, hey, call my agent. Let's get this done.
It's kind of a breach of protocol. You know, I don't know. Are the Cowboys uniquely being tough here on Mulligetta because of something in the past? Are they just refusing to talk to the agent as part of the negotiation? It doesn't seem like fair practices or whatever you'd call it, if you ask me. I think you talk to agents to try to get deals done, not try to work around them. But
I mean, maybe that worked in the 90s. Yeah. Maybe that's how they were able to get some deals done then. Times have changed, my man. And if you listen to some of the stuff that Todd France and that podcast yesterday, maybe we'll get to that a little bit.
Sure.
They tend to get bent over backwards in these deals.
That's why they're avoiding the agents. It happened with Zeke and his agent. They just got tore up in those negotiations. Same thing with Dak now, not once, but twice. So I totally get why they would try to circumvent the agent there. And to Jerry's credit, I think he's just being brutally honest about the fact that he doesn't know this guy's name. I don't think he's even trying to be mean there. He's like, I don't even know half the guys on my roster, damn it.
That would be hilarious if Jerry truly doesn't know who David Mulligetta is.
He might not.
Yeah.
Is that a surprise?
It should be. I mean,
it should be for somebody who's the owner and general manager.
What's not being reported is after he said that, he was like, is Marowich still our kicker? And he was just asking.
Yeah, you know, a lot of different interpretations of this. I think, you know, Jerry's once again got us talking, and maybe that's the narrative that I would buy on, like, how is this happening or why is this happening right now? But, you know, maybe it's just the way Jerry goes about his business right now. I know Mike McCarthy felt like it was weird how the negotiation went, or, you know, the lack of negotiation or contacting his agent.
Yeah, Don Yee and they really never got to where it even became a discussion. The number of years were a problem for the McCarthy side, and, you know, Jerry said, well, that's what we're going to do, and we're going to move on if that's the case, and they did. I think the last thing I'd want to do in this negotiations would be to piss off David Mulligetta.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I would do. This guy will hold a grudge, and he will hold a grudge, and he will make the Cowboys pay. And I guarantee you, when the deal's done and it's one of the bigger contracts ever in the history of the National Football League, David Mulligetta will raise a glass of champagne and say, now they know my effing name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think you need to be real careful with this one, because this guy is he's shrewd. He's tough. He is going to do every dime he can out of the negotiations. And in this case, if you piss him off, he might even take more blood from you. So I would be really, really careful if I'm the Cowboys and how you handle him.
He's everything the Cowboys haven't been for 30 years, a winner. He gets the most for every one of his clients. First ever fully guaranteed contract, he got that. Deshaun Watson, highest paid safety contract in history. Antoine Winfield Jr., come on up. Highest paid corner contract, the last two this offseason. Derek Stingley, J.C. Horn, that's David Mulligetta. Shame on you for really not knowing the agent's name. You damn well should if you want to have some serious conversations about paying your superstar.
I wonder if the Cowboys might be the ones that are ticked off here, though. You know, with if Jerry does know who Mulligetta is, which I assume he does, and
maybe he just didn't want to pronounce
his name. He probably just doesn't remember the name.
He just wanted to. I don't think he wanted to pronounce the name. I think that probably
that could be true.
Probably something.
Well,
I mean,
that'd have been a hell of a drop
when you pair it with him trying to work around Mulligetta.
I think
this is Jerry Jones playing coy. Like, who are you talking about? I'm just talking with Micah Parsons about the deal. I'm not talking with the agent. Mike has asked him to call him, and he's acting like he doesn't know who he is. Huh. This is a consistent pattern, I think, where, you know, Jerry is trying to work around the agent, perhaps because, again, he's already mad at him for something. That's my read. Is Jerry's not doing this out of confusion for who one of the most powerful agents in the NFL is. He's doing it to publicly dunk on him at 877-881-1053. If you'd like, the Franklin Frankel injury attorney text line is open. Whatever the case, they are perhaps playing with fire?
I think so. I think this, you know, you do have it appears that Jerry, he's always had a really good relationship with his star players. Mm-hmm. You know, and Tony Romo talks about the story the first time that him and Bill Parcells and Jerry all met in a little room, and they were and Jerry was trying to, like, listen, you're going to sign this deal, you know, and, you know, Micah really does want to be here. And, you know, Jerry senses that, and Jerry's thinking, well, let's get this deal done without talking with David about it, I'm sure. And that's not going to work. That's not how that might have worked in 1989. It's not working today.
I feel like it worked with Tyron Smith in like 2013 or something. They got a very team-friendly deal.
Maybe, yeah. The Cowboys have proven if they have a really good relationship with agents, and they had a good one with
Osa
Odigizua. You know, they had one. They will get deals done that way. They will get deals done if, in fact, it's not the highest, you know, the highest paid player at that position. They'll get that deal done. But then they'll have to give in, they'll cave, and you know, it ultimately looks bad on them. But Mulligetta is playing this the right way. He just needs to be silent, let Micah handle things the way he wants to handle, because Micah will be outspoken about it.
Yeah, talk about it as much as you want.
Micah's got the platform to say whatever he wants to say, and Mulligetta didn't have to say a word. That man's negotiated almost $1 billion worth of contracts. So he knows what he's doing.
But Micah was willing to take less than 40. Now that you've brought disrespect into the equation, maybe this becomes personal for him. Yeah. I could definitely see why, you know, you would allow it to. But, you know, I do wonder, like, the Cowboys drew a line with Randy Gregory and said, no, we're not doing it. Screw you. Yeah. I wonder if at some point in these free agent negotiations where these high-powered agents just wait them out and then reset the market at each position, if they do draw a line in the sand, you know, and maybe this is the one with a guy who doesn't always make the best impression around the building.
If you're going to draw the line in the sand, then get on the phone and start talking about trading him, you know, if you're going to do that. Don't let this thing, don't have it turn into a situation like with Jalen Brunson and others that have walked out of here, you know, because of mess ups with the contract and things. If your intention is not to get this thing done, or you don't think it can get done, then you need to get on the phone and start trying to shop this guy.
And it's a heck of a lot easier to draw the line in the sand when it is Randy Gregory compared to the best in the business. You know, this is top of the market stuff, and they traditionally cave to the top of the market guys. Lamb, Dak, Zach Martin.
And
then, of course, Micah now. That's the expectation.
Yeah. yeah, I would not be in the business of trying to move on from him. I would be, you know, wanting to get the deal done and have a great relationship with the agent. But, you know, Micah is the last star player from his draft class that does not have a deal done yet. And I wouldn't be surprised if this goes into franchise tag land. And again, I do think Jerry Jones, part of this is, you know, juicing up that news media cycle of covering this thing.
Yes.
He's getting a tremendous amount of money, and he's such a great actor, as we saw in Landman.
He's a good actor.
I think there is a hold my beer and watch this component when, you know, high drama plays out like this, almost predictably so, and I appreciate it.
A part of me feels like that's almost giving them too much credit. I really think this is just how they operate.
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything until they have to do something, until the deadline is actually here. Otherwise, why do we care? We're living about it day by day. We're fat, happy. We got 3 Super Bowls. We're the richest organization in sports. We don't have to do anything. Micah, you can ask me to call the agent. I don't have to get a deal done with you right now. When I have to, I'll pick up the phone. I'll call the agent. I think we give them too much credit a little bit here, because the Cowboys are going to be talked about regardless if there's a Micah deal, there's a Dak deal. Name the player. The Cowboys will find some way to be in the news. So that's like, it's an okay narrative. I don't know. I don't think that it really plays.
I think, you know, what I'm basing it off of is over the years just hearing stories of Jerry saying offhanded comments to family members like, well, we got a lot of traction out of that one. We got like 48 hours out of that soundbite. You know, I do think Jerry looks at media engagement as a game for how much he can keep the Cowboys in the news cycle. And when they haven't been in for a while, or it's shaping up to be a boring offseason, he's got a knack for having the timing to strike, you know, when it's hot, and to sort of drag this thing out. You know, they're not bad negotiators, Zach. I mean, they're some of the best businessmen in the NFL. See, that's what I'm saying.
But not with NFL contracts. It hasn't proven to be that way.
That's why it only makes sense that they're doing it on purpose for the engagement. Is because are they just randomly horrible at negotating player contracts?
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
No, they're bad at it.
They're doing this on purpose.
We will play this Todd France audio later, and we'll circle back. You tell me if you think they played this well, if they're good at it.
They are some of the greatest negotiators, and they always know the opportunity being lost.
I don't think that they're good negotiators anymore when it comes to football contracts. I think that's proven to be false, that they're good. They might have been at one time. They are no longer good at it.
Well, I mean, they don't know how to win a Super Bowl. You know, that's clear.
And a big reason is their salary cap is always screwed. And why is that? Because they wait to the end to do all of these deals. And then when they don't learn from it, even when they say they've learned from it, they then will say, no, we haven't learned from it. And then again, they're going to go through the exact same thing where they wait to get the deal done and it's going to screw themselves.
So what they get, what they lose is a couple $2 million a year. What they get is tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars of brand exposure from people like you and me, but on a national level, on a global level, in several different languages, talking about this constantly around the calendar.
Yeah.
That is worth way more than losing a couple of millions of dollars on the salary cap.
Kevin, we're going to talk about them regardless if it's a contract or not.
Not
every
right now.
Every day we're looking
not
for
right
things
now.
To talk about for the
Baseball
Cowboys.
Baseball started, NCAA tournament started, most of the country cares about the NBA a lot more. This is football country. We will locally, but not as much.
The NFL drafts in 3 weeks.
They're about to take the entire first segment where we talk about 5 or 6 different things. We talked about one thing right now.
Yeah.
It's the Cowboys with 3 weeks to go until the draft.
And we could have done it exactly talking about what Brian Schottenheimer said about the draft. There's always an angle that you can use with the Cowboys. It doesn't have to be the contracts.
Yeah, I mean, the draft stuff is good, right?
Yeah.
Those days, there's not the zing. This has the zing to it.
And this is the zing.
Jerry's a zing guy.
Because it's Jerry saying something that is foolish again.
Yep. I mean,
it's like the crazy uncle that's saying wacky things at the table that you're like, oh, God, please stop.
Which sparks so many different conversations. Like, maybe they're so ticked off at him, they will trade him. You got to go down that guarantee. That's going to be on ESPN and NFL Network tonight.
No, it's true.
At least 20 segments. All right. What else is going on here in the G-Bag Nation? Rangers were embarrassed in Cincinnati. 6-run innings. Ellie De La Cruz torpedo batted his way to 7 ribbies. we need to get some of these torpedo bats. Apparently, Jock Peterson's up for it.
He immediately said he's going to torpedo bat immediately.
I think he's ordering a bunch of them.
Yeah.
He's like, yep, want them.
Yep.
And I'm taking them right into the game.
Those things are going to be on back order real quick.
Yeah.
Torpedo.
Mark Church couldn't keep his hat on. Bochy had to pull him. He was trying to figure out the comms device, and it was a bad scene. It was kind of embarrassing. Pre-game coming up again tonight at 5 o'clock. Evaldi on the hill for the Rangers. Mavs couldn't get anything going against the Nets sustainable, even though Gafford returned and he was amazing. They lose 113-109.
Yeah.
24 points in the third quarter, 22 in the fourth.
Bad fourth overall. I mean, the fact that Brooklyn, it's the first time that Brooklyn's went back-to-back games, by the way, since All-Star break.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Oh, wow, that's tough. That's a bad loss. That is a bad loss. G-Bag of the Day is coming up at 2:30. Jack Leiter is next in the nation. All right, welcome back. We got Jack Leiter here ready to rock with us. It is time now for the Texas Rangers Player Show, brought to you by Globe Life Field. For over 125 years, Globe Life has helped protect families when they need it most. Globe Life, make tomorrow better. Here he is, the College World Series champion, the first round pick of your Rangers, Pacific Coast League Pitcher of the Year last season, and now getting it done for your Texas Rangers, Jack Leiter here on The Fan. And good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Right on. Well, congrats on your first start the other day. That was terrific. What was your reaction? You feel like that's confirmation your hard work's paying off?
Yeah. Anytime positive results happen and you can help the team win the game, it's a great feeling, and I just hope to do that, a lot more in the future here.
What's that do for your confidence? How much more comfortable are you feeling up there right now?
Yeah, I feel good. I think in a lot of ways, confidence comes from preparation, and I feel really confident in the preparation that I have done and continue to do, and just my process and routine, and taking it one day at a time. So I'm just excited to continue to prepare well and compete my butt off, do as much as I can to help the team win.
So you didn't play on opening day, but you got to be a part of the festivities having made the opening day club. How is that? Like, what was opening day like for you being a part of that and also just having your buddy Kamar Rocker with you?
It was great. Yeah, it's great having Rock here. I will say, first opening day, and I was playing catch with Kamar and got hit in the head with a fly ball, so that wasn't great. Kind of squared me up, which was an unfortunate twist on my first opening day. But besides that, it was great.
You got a frozen peas on your head during the game, and we didn't even realize it.
No. It ended up being all right, honestly. But yeah, could have been worse, I guess.
Well, okay, you get that first win, though. I imagine the clubhouse celebration when Jack Leiter walks through the doors, it was probably a pretty awesome moment, huh?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. The guys there to celebrate and as a team, celebrate our first win of the year. So hopefully there's a lot more where that came from, and we can get on a roll here.
How were you and Jonah working well together during that start? Jonah, there was a moment where he came up and was talking to you, and I know just talking with someone on the Rangers beat, it seemed like that might have been a calming effect. What was that conversation like, and how is he to be able to have the backstop for you?
Yeah, I mean, Jonah's great. He's a pro for sure in the way he prepares and just how he goes about his business. So he's definitely a guy that a lot of people in the clubhouse look up to, and he's fun to watch. And obviously that was his game, because he called a great game, did what he does behind the plate, and hit two homers. So that was pretty awesome.
It's Jack Leiter here with you on The Fan. Jack, I think most players, they probably have this moment where it's like, holy cow, I'm in the big leagues and I just had a great game. This is absolutely amazing. Is it any different for you think, because you are the son of a big leaguer and you dominated youth and amateur and college? Like, how long have you expected something like this to happen?
I mean, it's a humbling game. So there's been times in my career where, going back to middle school and high school, where I was hoping to be able to play college baseball and just dreaming of being a big leaguer, I would say it wasn't an expectation the whole time. It was always the dream, though. And there's been times, when I got drafted as high as I did, where I felt like I was on the mountaintop, and then kind of knocked down a peg in the minor leagues pretty frequently, and just working my way through that and figuring out my process and my mental routine and how I prepare and how other guys do it and do it at a high level, and understanding that the good ones and the bad ones, they're all inevitable. And sometimes the bad one, it's not as bad as you thought. And the difference between the bad one and the good one might not be much at all sometimes. So it's a very, very interesting game, can be frustrating at times, but once you start to understand that, I think it's a beautiful thing. And just prepare to, for the highs and lows, honestly.
Hey, Jack, did the things that you went through last year, did that make you maybe more mentally tough going into spring and then maybe into the season?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I think obviously mental toughness is very important, and just the ability to keep getting knocked down and keep getting back up and going and figuring out ways to get better a little bit at a time, one day at a time, one pitch at a time, and kind of just being able to dominate the routine one day at a time. And I think that was the biggest takeaway from last year, through the good and the in AAA and the bad, some of the bad in my short time in the big leagues. I think that's the biggest thing, is good or bad, you got to keep going and move on as quick as you can.
So Evo gets the start tonight, and then you take the ball tomorrow for the getaway day. How much are you able to gain from Eovaldi and watching him attack this lineup in preparation for your start tomorrow?
Yeah, he's awesome. After opening day, he kind of walked me through what he was seeing with some of the guys and what he thought they were doing and their approaches and how it might have been the same or different from the scouting reports. And I'm sure he'll do some more of that, whether it's after the game or pregame tomorrow. And I mean, I'm excited to watch him go about his business. It's fun to watch him compete in every way, and he's definitely another guy who a lot of people look up to in this clubhouse, including myself, because the way he carries himself is second to none, I think.
It's Jack Leiter with us here on The Fan. How much torpedo bat conversation is taking place in the clubhouse these days?
Yeah, I mean, a fair amount. I think our hitters are definitely intrigued with it. I don't know exactly if any guys have them yet, but I'm sure with the results that other teams have been getting, that our guys will be swinging them here in no time.
Is that something that, as a pitcher, like you feel like, hey, this is kind of BS, or are you like, hey, let's welcome it, whatever the hitter needs to do, I'm Jack Leiter, damn it.
I mean, I honestly don't know. Like, I haven't seen the numbers on it. If it could be a fluke, and some of these 20 run games are not related to the bat, but. Yeah, I mean, whatever they decide, we gotta do our job. So if it becomes a little bit harder because somehow the bats are making them barrel up more balls, then everybody's got to deal with it, and we'll see. But we can't pay attention to the rules we can't control.
Just remind them that you dominated aluminum bats in your day. That's what you have to say. Listen, this torpedo bat, I was the aluminum killer, is what I was.
That is fair.
It's Jack Leiter here with you on 105.3 The Fan. So do you get starstruck by teammates or opponents?
I'll say that kind of came and went quickly, which I'm grateful for. Obviously, being in the big leagues is a dream, and you get up there and there's guys that I used to watch on TV and use in MLB The Show and kind of idolize. And then all of a sudden they're in the same clubhouse or they're in the other dugout. And it's a surreal moment, I think. But then you quickly realize, like, you have a job to do. Nothing's changed. The scouting report says what it is. Your plan of attack is what it is. And you go out and you compete, whoever's in the box. So I would say the starstruck aspect kind of faded away quickly in a good way.
What type of rookie tasks have you had to deal with since getting up with the big boys? Have they you gotta bring food on the planes? You gotta do anything in particular? I know Josh Young was doing the bartending on the road trips on the airplane whenever he was a rookie, but what do they have you tasked with?
Yeah, I mean, I was carrying a cooler, but yeah, there's coolers duties. There's somebody's got to carry the speaker on there. Probably get called up and sing a song at some point on the bus. So it's all good. It's all fun.
What's going to be your song, you think?
Maybe something country. Maybe some Toby Keith or something like that.
All right. What? What
how do you like me now?
What's respect. The go-to Toby Keith song? I mean, can you do a little rendition for us?
No. We're not going to go that far.
Hey, go with the boot in your ass. It's the American way. That's always a crowd pleaser, yeah. Jack. No, the chorus is banging.
Toby Keith's a legend.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jack. Congrats once again, and best of luck to you. Give him hell. We'll be pulling for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Salute. The Texas Rangers Player Show brought to you by Globe Life Field. For over 125 years, Globe Life has helped protect families when they need it most. Globe Life, make tomorrow better. Time now for the G-Bag of the Day. Into the Pimp Cup we go. Here's Lubinsky and Fallacious. Buddy.
Howdy. Just wanted to let this really ride out.
Thought you zoned out there for a second. I looked at you. You were staring into space.
Oh, no. That's just my generally just kind of like looking face. If I just look at you clueless, that's unfortunately just my face. But just as y'all said, G-Bag of the Day. We do it every day here on the G-Bag Nation at 2:30. And per tradition, we start with the winner.
On the cheap, yo, free those spending cash figures. We need zero hands down. I'll take Tommy Sledger, even Rego. Failing all the way through Cross. Hey, Joey, where did he go? What's up with this old phony ass loser and his drama? The industry can hate me. F him, go see my mama. How many flaws you really got? I mean, it's too many options. I'm finna slash all his money. I'm gay plocking. Play the clip and hide the eye roll of Sean watching. Sometimes you gotta stop down and show better. Certified board op man, take producer out your damn LinkedIn. Walk him out, bro, fine, you know that he been phoning in. Throw him then, just like fish, Richie Grigo and them. Safe eight, I hear you kinda dumb. Don't even know how to make a woman to any chick that talks to him and they in love. Just know that you'll only fit in the tub. Tim tells me Choppy just can't handle when Sean's not around. And that's why Chi-Chi hanging with us at the firehouse. And Choppy never showers. What's that all about? Toxic masculinity. Toxic from the waist down. Wah, 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 wah. Bob, pick them up. Wah, 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 wah. They just kind of sus. Why y'all looking so
there
sad?
There he is. Can't Bob Belt, our three-time champ. Two-time champ. He's two-time champ.
He's two-timer. Two-timer. Looking for three.
Right on. Congrats to Bobby Belt there. Sean and RJ. 6 to 10 weekdays. Here on the fan. Lubinsky, who's challenging today?
So really quickly, I did want to throw something back from this previous weekend. So on Sunday, UCLA beats LSU to clinch their ticket to the Final Four. And, you know, head coach for LSU, Kim Mulkey, always just on fire, even in postgame.
Jaden Smith, KLSU Sports. Coach, it's the second straight year you guys get eliminated in the Elite Eight.
Is that terrible or is that good?
Terrible.
How many Final Fours you play in?
None.
So it's probably pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Never mind. I don't have a question anymore.
KLSU, she goes after her own reporters.
Yeah, that's right. You couldn't make no Final Four, could you? Get my shotgun. Get off my porch. She sound like an old pistol.
Yeah, dude. She's hilarious. I think she's great for the sport, though. You know, it's like the Dan Hurley stuff with UConn. Yeah, just give me more of that. She's ridiculous.
Yeah, she wins.
She kind of sounds
games.
Like the witch on Wizard of Oz. Though.
Oh, yeah, she'll do that. Yeah.
Man, she's mean.
Yeah, she can voice a wicked witch.
She does
cartoon
not have
character
time for you. Yeah, she just doesn't have time for you.
I like the competes.
Yeah, she will compete.
I'd like her coaching my team. I think.
Yeah,
tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
But man.
How many Final Fours you been to?
Yeah, she was just on it. She was just quick wit. My goodness. All right, so now we will transition over to World Star Hip Hop.
Yeah.
Because, my goodness, you want to talk about Toxic Tuesday? Just go scroll on World Star. It's all toxic. But let's just say, for a little piece of advice for anyone out there, if anyone comes up to you on the street and they're like a TikToker, they want to do an interview, be really, really careful about what you let slip.
What's something you never told each other?
I cheated like 3 years ago.
Oh. Cheated?
Yeah. What? Yeah, I dated my brother. Cheat on him? Yeah. What? Ashley, what? Well,
you mean to say that?
No, I meant to say no. I had to tell her at some point.
What? I had to tell him at some point.
That's right.
No, I don't know. No, hold on. What?
No, but yeah, we just got to film an interview, though.
Colin, why would you do that? I had to say something. You cheated on Colin. mutual. You cheated on him?
He didn't know that.
Ashley, what?
Ashley.
I don't know. No.
It wasn't that serious. I thought you wouldn't care.
I wouldn't care. It's my brother.
Oh, my God. Oh, crap.
Okay, so she was dating her best friend's brother.
Yeah,
now, wow, dude. A lot of layers to that. A lot of layers to that.
Onions have layers.
I mean, when is the statute of limitations? You know, like 3 years? They're clearly already broken up. So at this point, it's sort of like bygones.
No, I think it was she's with the guy that she was right next to.
No, so it was like the guy was interviewing her. That was the male voice you heard in that clip, and he was interviewing these two girls, and the main interviewee was like, oh yeah, I cheated 3 years ago. And the other chick was like, wait a minute, you were dating my brother 3 years ago.
Oh.
And then she was like, well, I thought it was mutual. And this girl was just like, oh, well, you know, what do you know?
Yeah. Oh, I see.
My goodness.
Awkward.
That is messy.
So toxic.
Is it Toxic Tuesday? Right on brand, Ross. Nice work. Is it our champ, Bobby Belt, two times looking for three? Is it LSU's Kim Mulkey? Or is it, had to tell him at some point? Okay, I'm voting for the champ, Chief. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and double down, Ross.
Yep, same thing.
Bullcheck.
I'll go with Bob.
Brian?
LSU.
By a score 4-1, still your G-Bag of the Day champion, now three times. It's Bobby Belt. All right, Chief, what are we doing next?
Restroom Revelations, featuring the hazards of moving your team to Sacktown, plus luxury Lambo Portageons and a Portland P-Man is on the loose next in the nation.
Thank you very much, Ross, in for Lucius today. Thanks to Jack Leiter, who joined us back there at 220. If you're listening with the Odyssey app or Twitch or YouTube, you can go back and listen to Jack, who joined us. Heck of a first star for him over the weekend. Here's the Chief with something I've been waiting to talk about all day.
Yeah, it's been a while, I think, since we've done Restroom Revelations, but there's a lot of sports and bathroom headlines going on all around the world today. So let's go ahead and tee it up, Ross. The hazards of a Major League Baseball team having a temporary home in a minor league park. We head to Sacktown, the home
Which
of the
one?
Oakland A's.
We've got two teams with minor league parks in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, this is going to be the A's temporary home in Sacramento, Pacific League Ballpark, Sutter Health Park. I guess it has two names.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have bathrooms attached to the dugouts, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
Much to the dismay of the A's and visiting teams like last night with the Chicago Cubs. Every other MLB stadium has a tunnel that leads from the dugout to the clubhouse and locker room when you need to use the facilities. But Sutter Health's players area is located near left field, leaving visiting players having to, when nature calls, have the game delayed for a moment so that they can run from the dugout in right field all the way through the outfield to left field.
Brutal.
To go use the facilities. Now, you've stopped down the game. Everyone, you have teammates laughing at you, and you're sort of, hopefully not prairie dog waddling, but that's going to happen to somebody.
Ooh,
everybody in the stadium knows, everyone in the ballpark knows what is happening now. This individual is having to go use the facilities. If you're pee shy, this could be a nightmare. If you have any type of restroom bashful qualities about yourself, this could be a nightmare. Yep. Here's the Cubs play-by-play team throwing it down to the field reporter, painting the picture for Seiya Suzuki.
Turn it downstairs at Taylor McGregor.
Okay, this is the important stuff in between the half inning. I hear an enormous eruption of laughter in the Cubs dugout, thinking, what is going on? And look at that man running through the outfield. No, that is not PCA going to center field. That is Seiya Suzuki making the walk of shame, although he was sprinting. So it was more of a sprint of shame. But the guys in the dugout certainly got a kick of watching him sprint across, and you can see Seiya's big smile. So, folks, we have our first walk of shame.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The first walk of shame of the year. For some individuals, this probably wouldn't. This is a nothing burger. No problem.
Yep.
I go to the bathroom when I want. I'm an American human being, and I have freedoms. So some people have no issues with it at all. But others, I would imagine, this is absolutely embarrassing. Especially if all of a sudden this isn't a quick turnaround where it's obvious you were going number one.
Yeah.
It's going to be plainly obvious when you're sitting in there for I mean, think about Walchuk, a guy who, one, is anti going in public restrooms in general, but number two, is a guy that needs 20, perhaps 30 minutes at a time on the
throne. In the comfort of my own home, 100% I do. Now, I've gotten better here at work. I actually had an emergency deal with Hagee when I was filling in for Corey. I made it in and out of there within 5 minutes. That might have been a new personal best.
Proud of you.
So when I need to be quick and concise, I can be. But this would be an absolute nightmare. I would hate this.
Can we not get the Jerry Jones bathroom training camp system set up at these ballparks?
I'm glad you asked that because right now.
That right there is beautiful. I mean, just right outside the dugout or maybe back over in an area.
Maybe we just get some bigger ones.
So we've got that up, air conditioned. Yeah, but
Oakland's owners would have to not be so cheap, right?
Okay.
They would have to foot the bill for this.
I see what we're doing here.
But I would like to take you to the Green Bay Press Gazette, where the headline reads, with the NFL draft in Green Bay comes an increased demand for luxury porta-johns. And there is a company called John Johns who provide luxury porta-john rentals. And they are being inundated.
Did John Harvick do this?
With requests. I would like to
think. We can only hope.
Former.
I mean, he would
someone
think of
social
like this.
The other day.
I'm just going to say this. I live in Green Bay for 5 years.
We know.
There's a lot of people that don't use restrooms. They just go outside.
Outhouses or we're just like just, on the
just,
floor?
Just for number ones.
No, just walking out of a bar. And standing in the parking lot.
Oh, the drunken bar parking lot.
So they're used to people not having luxury bathrooms.
Well, now because of the amount of people, I mean, it's going to be
crazy.
250,000 people crashing into Green Bay for the NFL draft
disgusting.
Festivities. So they are now having to provide as many facilities as possible. And not only that, but also for like different types of, like one of the quotes here is there's definitely a lot more houses that are having them just for parking and for extra people in their draft parties. Definitely a lot more parties than usual in the stadium area. So parking lots are going to be filled with tailgate draft parties and with the way, I mean, it's really, really cool with Lambeau because it's like right there in the neighborhood. So
right in the middle, you could walk across the street and you'll into a neighborhood.
So you're going to have block parties and the need for
backyard
high
parties
level
right out the stadium.
Jerry Jones luxury porta-johns are at an all time high right now. The demand is through the roof. They're not going to be able to provide it all. Like these guys at John Johns are like, man, we're sorry because there's only so much we can do here. But these are the ones with the AC. You know, they got hardwood floors, all sorts of vents and fragrances.
Those are going to end up in the hands of the NFL. The NFL, their office and stuff, the high-end luxury ones, the TV, the...
Oh, the important people are going to get the good.
And then everybody else is pee on the concrete at Lambeau Field. You know, that's kind of what I think is going to happen here.
Wow. I'll be tracking this over the course of the next couple of weeks here leading up to the draft
and see what type of
fallout. I mean, they may have to outsource from around the country to get as many luxury porta-johns in there as possible. Now, we do have an issue going on in Dawson's hometown.
Oh, what happened?
We have a Portland P-man who is ruffling the feathers of an entire neighborhood with a weird tactic. He's leaving gallon jugs worth of urine in people's recycling bins.
Wow.
And so I would like to take you to local KATU
in the recycling bins.
News. Yes, in the recycling bins. And they can't figure out why. Here's the news report from KATU News.
You kind of know what the urine smells like.
Yes, urine. That's what this story is about. But before you turn away, understand that this could be you living in a Northeast Portland neighborhood, minding your own business when he shows up in the middle of the night. This all started in September when Van Dyne and his wife noticed their garbage bins had not been collected.
So I went to open the blue bin, and lo and behold, there was a nice deposit of gallon-sized bottles of urine, to put it plainly. And there were six of them.
Six bottles of urine in his recycling bin. The garbage hauler wouldn't take it. It's biohazard.
Oh, geez.
What does your wife think about all this?
Yeah, she's befuddled as well.
Eventually, Van Dyne pulled his garbage bins, hoping that the urine dropper would go away. And he did. Straight to the neighbor's bin. And then another neighbor.
It sort of started to, you know, unravel. And I don't know why he's hitting the same location so many times. That doesn't make any sense to me. And or why he is doing it.
So who is this man driving a late model vehicle depositing bottles of urine? This grainy video shows him pulling up, getting out, and leaving the jugs behind.
Oh. Whew. Okay.
I think you gotta have a couple of alphas in the neighborhood putting together some level of a tactical team, hiding in the bushes and in the shadows at night, yeah, and just go stakeout style.
Yes.
And you just got to take matters into your own hands, because I think this is going to be a laugh you off the phone with the PD. You know, now, like we got bigger problems.
Okay, keep in mind you are in Portland, Oregon, so the firearm laws aren't going to be as, forgiving as they might be here in the great state of Texas, but we're good. You know, I want to be clear here on what kind of Southern justice we're going to bring to this man's party.
Yeah.
And particular evening. I like what you're doing there. We're going to wait till he gets out, right?
Yeah. And yeah. Then, get out of the car, catch him in the act of putting gallon jugs worth of what we believe to be human urine, but we have no idea.
And then do we call the cops at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. I think ultimately we're not trying to completely end this particular gentleman, okay, but there's going to be, it's like ballpark security, you know, yeah, in the outfield. We're treating this guy like we're all now.
Well, he's getting away in that case.
I wonder what this is all about.
Are you talking about the windbreaker people trying to catch us?
But I'm talking about high level. He's running away. I'm talking about neighborhood alpha males. You got to go find four or five guys that are trained, ready to get their hands dirty a little bit.
Do you think the alpha male is going to be happy with just calling the cops at that point?
There's probably going to be one or two screw loose guys that are going to want to tie him up and do some torturous act to really make sure that he understands that he can't be urinating in any form or fashion.
He doesn't
in
want
our recycling
child predator
bins.
I just on want him
is,
for sure.
Is this some
child predator style? Yeah. You know, you slap the guy around a little bit and then you zip tie him up until the cops show up and let them handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you pour some of the pee back onto him.
Maybe pee
just
on
so
him.
He knows eye for an eye style.
The seems I'm like it could be goat. Personal. Like, is this some sort of a vendetta?
Well,
is he mad at you?
He's hitting multiple people in the neighborhood. So it's not like zeroing in on one particular guy necessarily, because this guy pulled his bins. Next thing you know, it's in the neighbors. So there's something going on with this particular street or whatever. I do look forward to getting this guy caught and figuring out exactly what it is that, what's the reasoning behind all of this.
I think he's doing a great job just throwing him away. He could just leave this all on the streets. People just come around. At least you do.
I mean,
diligence.
you could just dump it out into a drain or.
You could do that.
Yeah,
that would be sensible.
You could just go somewhere else.
Yeah,
you know, where you could pee onto the ground and not have to store it.
Yeah,
if it's a problem, he's not doing this to dispose of
but
it.
But that could be illegal. You could get arrested. I had a friend that actually did get a citation for doing that in public. We were playing football. He had to go run himself over to the side of the yard, and next thing you know, a cop drove by. And
so a working theory, he's living in his car, he's using it in that way because he doesn't want to get arrested for that, you know, especially you could be exposing yourself to somebody. Next thing you know, you're in for something else, and you got to, you know, on a registration list.
910 suggests waterboarding with the urine once the alpha male's tactical
See, that's
team
what I was
them.
Thinking. Like, do you knock him down and pee on him? You know, do you tie him up and just be like, hey, since you like pee so much,
there probably needs to be some elements of that. But yeah, this is what's going on back in your hometown.
Because it's vile and disgusting. It doesn't surprise me. You know, I can't rule out some kind of kink. You know, that's where my mind immediately went.
But we listen and we don't shame.
Imagine how long it would take, though, for one human being to fill up 6 gallons worth of jugs with just pee.
It's got to be a good month, maybe. Good couple weeks, at least.
Man, I don't know.
NFL news.
The Oregon pee party.
Sorry. Well, Chuck, where are we going
next? Historical.
All right, we got rule changes. Will the NFL continue to own Christmas Day? And, how about what the Cowboys want to do with the 12th overall pick?